The late Ellen Noble of happy memory and I used to exchange poems. And one poet I kept trying to push on her was a favorite of mine, Rainer Maria Rilke. Rilke once wrote to a young person who was all full of doubt and confusion this. He said, "Be patient with all that is unsolved in your heart and learn to love the questions. Treat them as you would a locked room or a book in a foreign tongue. Do not seek answers that you are not yet able to live." This is the point. Live everything. Live the questions now. If you live the questions now, then someday, gradually, without your even noticing, you will live yourself into the answer. What the poet understood was that giving someone the right answer that they are not equipped to understand does them no good. And that, of course, was Jesus' exact teaching style as well. If you think about the Gospels, think about all the encounters that Jesus had, all the questions that Jesus had addressed to him, he very seldom gave a direct answer. "Who is my neighbor?" Well, there was this man who was walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. "Should we pay the tax to Rome or not? Show me the coin of tribute. Whose image is on that? Are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another? Go and tell them the blind see, the lame walk, the poor have good news preached to them." Jesus' style was to trust people to come to the answer if they lived out the question. We have this encounter today in St. Luke chapter 13 where Jesus has a question addressed to him. Are there few who are going to be saved? Very simple question, take a yes or a no. But Jesus does not answer the question. He says instead, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate." You figure it out, Jesus says. So faith then is not so much a matter of having the right answers as it is living the question. Well, let's look at that scene. Strive to enter through the narrow gate. That word strive is an interesting word. The Greek word has its same root in English as agony. The word is agon. Agon. So this is what strive is. And so you would use that word for any time you're making an effort, you're trying to achieve some end, you're working to get to a goal. That is all an agon. So a student who is studying hard has an agon. They probably have an agony, but that's something else again, you know. An athlete who is working to get in shape and training, that's agon. A soldier, as St. Paul puts it in the epistle today, having the discipline of learning how to be a new kind of person, that's all an agon, all that same word that Jesus uses today, and he's applying it to a religious context. This is the same kind of effort that religious people have to make. And the contrast, of course, with an agon, with this striving, is presuming. I made the Olympic team, I don't have to work at it anymore. Well, if you have that attitude, then you're not going to win. Oh, I got accepted to this elite engineering school. I don't have to work hard anymore. You'll be home pretty quickly if that's your attitude. And it applies to religion. We played in your streets. We had supper at your table. Jesus says, big deal. If you're not striving, you can't say, well, I came to church on Sunday. Did pretty good. That's not what striving to enter through the narrow gate is all about in the Lord's concept, because Jesus was not so much interested in how many were going to get to heaven, but on how to get to heaven. So, striving. How do we do that? How do we strive? How do we strengthen our drooping hands and our weak knees and set our feet on the right path, as the apostle puts it? The one thing I'm sure we should not do is imagine that we have to do more. That's a constant temptation. Well, if I did more praying, if I went to church more often, if I did more fasting, if I made more sacrifices, well, then I would have it. But we know that, in fact, more is not always better. An athlete who keeps training more and more and more pretty soon overdoes it and gets a strain and is injured and can't compete. It's not more training, but better training. A student who studies more and more and more pretty soon fries their brain and can't concentrate and can't learn. It's not more, but better study. And the same is true in the spiritual realm. It's not more prayers that with which we have to batter heaven. God already loves us. God already has named us and claimed us and chosen us. It's not more that we need. I'm reminded of the two brothers who were visiting their grandmother's house a few weeks before Christmas, and the younger boy prayed out in his loudest voice, "Dear God, please, I need a new bike." And his brother said to him, "You don't have to shout. God isn't deaf." And the boy said, "I know God isn't deaf, but Grandma is deaf." Don't treat God like Grandma. So if it's not more, what is it? How do we strive to enter in the narrow gate? I think if it's not more, it's with less. Less of ourselves, less of our plans. You know, we have great plans. We have wonderful plans. My plan is I'm going to be a very healthy person. My plan is that I'm going to have this comfortable life. My plan is that I'm going to have this success. My plan is that people will think well of me. My plan is that my family will live a long and happy life together. It's my plan. But if we're going to enter through the narrow gate, we have to trust that God's plan is better than my plan. You see, the narrow gate, in fact, opens up into the Garden of Gethsemane, where we learn to pray as Jesus did, "Not my will, but yours be done." Seek first the kingdom, and all this stuff will be given you beside, Jesus said. Can we live the question so that we trust that God is smarter than I am. Will we be able to always understand that God's will is always for the best? If we do, then we're setting our place at that heavenly banqueting table. Amen.